Blog Talk Radio.
And we are back on, I guess, ML Radio, Wax Warm Radio, a bunch of other things. Either way, Pro Lacrosse Face-Off, May 12th edition. The band is actually back together. I wasn't around for the Rolling Stones or the Led Zeppelin or the Pink Floyds, but I feel like this is kind of akin to all of that. I'm welcomed, as always, by Tom Bovey, and we have our resident MMA commentator turned author and now, once again, lacrosse analyst, Tim Thomas. It's really great to have you guys back in the fold. And we're going to have a couple really interesting guests tonight. We're hoping to get Coach Spolina on from the New York Lizards. We're also hoping to get on Kieran McArdle of the Florida launch here in a little while. That's all going to kind of be up in the air. We're kind of just winging this one, to be honest with you, everybody. But either way, guys, kind of awesome to have us all back together. And first off, like, I just really want to, I guess, start off the show kind of in a roundabout way by getting Tim's general sense of what's going on. Because, Tim, it seemed like last time you were on, it was an argument with our own Joe Keegan. And now that the season's kind of unfolded, you're the guy that hasn't really gotten his opinion out there as far as this radio show's concerned. What's been one of your main storylines that you've been watching so far this season?
It's the New York Wizards and everybody else. I've talked to a bunch of different people and debated it with a bunch of different people. You know, New York looks head and shoulders better and head and shoulders above everybody else in the league. And there's been talk about the Chesapeake Bay Hawks and what they've been able to do, and they certainly had a couple good performances and a couple nice games, but they've also been against Florida and Charlotte, and I'm sorry, but that doesn't really impress me. I really honestly think that New York has just looked head and shoulders better than everybody else in the league so far, and then you've kind of got a clump of everybody else. Denver hasn't impressed me at all. I think their defense and their goaltending has looked shoddy. Rochester is probably the number two team to me, I think, but they've also been kind of up and down and trying to find that balance that they had last year, and I think kind of filling out and figuring out who's going to do what on attack has been an issue for them. And everybody else, you know, the other four remaining teams, have really looked like a mess to me. Boston can't get out of their own way. It's the same thing as it was last year. They lose close games. Charlotte has nobody to score. Their midfield is overachieving like crazy, and they still they can't find ways to score. Florida is Florida, and Ohio is just they look sloppy, and they don't have enough production at the midfield and the faceoff X right now to really compete with the upper echelon teams. And when I say that, I mean New York.
Well, actually, Tim, that leads me into the first thing I wanted to talk about, which is the New York Lizards. Obviously, I mean, they're the undefeated team, and they're the juggernaut. However, they've had a lot of close games in the past couple weeks. They've had a couple two-point wins. They have destroyed some teams. They've overall looked like a dominant team. However, it does seem like there is a way to beat them, and there's a couple different ways that teams have kind of exploited their superstar lineup and made it seem like someone else is not going to kind of get through to them. And it's going to be interesting throughout the course of the season to see exactly where this team is going. And, Tom, real quick, before we get one of our guests on, I do want to ask you, do you think this team is vulnerable? Do you think that a couple two-point wins is enough to call any team vulnerable? Because at some point in time, if you're only winning by two and people are looking for chinks in your armor, does what does that make of what this team's going through? Do you foresee this team being any sort of having any sort of way to not be the dominant team we've seen so far this season?
No, I mean they're 5-0 for a reason. They've got all the horses in all the right places. Nobody else stacks up all the way down the lineup with them, and they're only getting better. They've only played three teams, so they're 5-0, but they've only played three teams. But at the same time, they swept two of the teams in the league already, and they're two teams that at least Rochester looks like a playoff contender.
Well, with that being said, I actually do want to welcome on Coach Spolina of the New York Wizards. And, Coach, thanks for making time for us tonight. And the first thing that I want to ask you is, you guys are 5-0 heading into this season. So far, you guys have seemed like the most dominant team in the league. How has it been integrating the players that you guys have had to integrate? And how has it been in the locker room with all these guys playing so well? And how's kind of the mesh going, I guess, is the question I want to ask.
It's, first of all, hello, gentlemen. I actually like listening before. You know, you guys are trying to find our kinks in our armor. I like that. I always like to know where we can get better. I think a lot was made from outside people, but I think so many of these moves were, we weren't throwing darts, you know. This was a calculated move that with pre-existing chemistry, and I said that a lot when the trade was made, and I think people kind of, I don't want to say ignored us, but just kind of maybe just, I don't know what it was, but, you know, this was something where, you know, Paul obviously was a big piece of the puzzle, and with that, you know, he put in through the entire U.S. process with JoJo and Ned running on a midfield line together. Our fourth midfielder is Mike Stone, who Paul played with forever in Boston. Attack-wise, you know, those three midfielders that I spoke about played with Rob. I mean, two of them played with him all last season. One of them, you know, and Paul played with Rob through to the U.S. game. And then Poske, you can add Poske to that mix. And, you know, Poske and Paul have connected on quite a few goals through both of their careers. So, I'll talk about those guys. And as I'm going to tell you, Paul Rabil, the player, has been as advertised. Paul Rabil, the leader, has been extremely undervalued. He is a fantastic leader, and I'm around sports and around athletics enough, you know, with my college team, and just, you know, I've coached in the league long enough. He is a very, very, very underrated leader. To me, the ultimate, you know, I want to say adhesive in our locker room has been my brother, you know, and like Drew Adams said to me the other day, you know, I just didn't realize how important a guy like that is until you have him. You don't, you know, when he wasn't there, Drew was like, I was very young when he was here and I wasn't in the league for long. And then, you know, he wasn't here and I just kind of didn't realize what it was like. And then just, you know, the kind of what he's bringing to the group emails and text messages and just being the mouthpiece of our offense, of our defense, and getting on the offensive guys and kind of being the guy that kind of brings it all together is, you know, I'll be honest with you, I've been in the league a long time, and chemistry-wise, this is probably, by far, and I could even, as a distant second, whoever it is, the group just genuinely is, it goes together. It's been fantastic, and, you know, we've dealt with a lot of injuries early in the year, too, so, you know, it's been awesome.
Coach, I'm going to throw you to Tim after this question, and I'm going to come back to something way later on. But we've had Rob on, we've had Crotty on, and we've asked them the exact same question. If the game's on the line, 30 seconds left, who gets the ball? And it's a question that we've asked the players because everyone wants to give the PC answer, you know, whoever's hot or – you know, whoever's playing the best right then. You know, it's a team game. And I just want to ask you as a coach, 30 seconds left, you have the ball, the game's tied. Who are you giving the ball to? You've got a gluttony of superstar talent. Who's the guy that you're drawing up a play for in a timeout right before that big play happens?
Well, you know, here's the greatest thing that we have. It's just really, you know, we're going to run our offense. We're not going to – and within that game, and I think what you've seen with us so far, that it's pretty much been a different guy each game that's had a day. Like even the other day, you know, we got down, you know, it was 14-12 with, you know, 4 minutes to go, you know, and we had a matchup that we wanted to take advantage of with JoJo, and he got underneath this guy and pretty easily and was able to score a goal. So I think, you know, sometimes we're going to go after the matchup. Sometimes we're going to just run what we're doing. We're getting right now, and it's a very good sign, is last year for the entire season we had 70 assists, 7-0. And, you know, this year, through five games, I think we're almost more than halfway there. So, and we're not even halfway through the year. So, you know, I know you guys are looking for substance there, and you want me to say, I want to give it to this guy. But the one thing, you know, I think we've shown is the shots are coming from everywhere. We're at, you know, I think three of our five games, we've had close to 60 shots in the high 50s. You know, so I don't think it's a matter of you know, who's going to take the shot. It's just going to be a matter of where we want it to come from.
Coach, it's Tim Thomas. How are you?
My man.
Now, I got to ask you, you weren't here in Boston. We missed you, by the way. But
I know. It sucked. I had a private jet. No joke. I had a private jet, one of our owners. We beat Albany with my women's team. We get to Islip. There was a sensor in the plane that was switched, so they had to get it switched. And literally, by the time they got it fixed, I would have landed around the end of the second quarter. So it was disappointing, nonetheless.
Well, obviously, you have all the confidence in the world in Duff, and Coach Duffy's been a coach in the league and had success there. But how tough is that for you, especially in such a close game where it seemed like your team had to make some adjustments? It looked like Boston was kind of picking on your brother early on, and they were dodging against him, and then they had to make some adjustments in the second half. How tough is that for you as a coach not to be there to make those adjustments?
Well, it was awful, but, I mean, the positive thing was, you know, I spoke with the staff on a call at halftime. I had an earpiece with one of our assistants, so I was able to. I was almost like the eye in the sky at a lot of points. You know, just being able to kind of just do the best I can from where I was. Brian, and you know, I can say this now because obviously last week he was really good. He tweaked his groin one of the first plays of the game, so he was in pain. And Steve Holmes, same exact thing. Steve, it happened right before halftime. So our guys were hurt, and Boston was trying to do that. And interestingly enough, they went into the game with, obviously they don't know Brian had a hurt groin. They went into the second game and tried to administer the same game plan. I think that's where, you know, obviously that, you know, we were pretty good in that. But I'm going to tell you, you've been around the league long enough to know I'm an all-in guy, and I care a lot about what I do. And it was very, very difficult to not be there.
And that you being an all-in guy, like you said, brings me to my second question. You got to watch the game and watch the broadcast, like you said, eye in the sky. And I got done. I was doing the radio broadcast at the stadium, and the first thing I see when I get on my phone after the broadcast is you talking about one of the announcers and one of the color commentary guys. How frustrating is it to sit there and listen to that home field kind of bias when it comes to broadcasts? And I've talked about it with other people that do the broadcast in the league. And how frustrating is that from your perspective?
Well, it was really frustrating from a guy that couldn't stop my grandmother his whole career. So, But, you know, it's just a different – it's like me when I go recruiting and I sit in the stands, you know, and I'm sitting in the stands and I'm not used to not being on the sideline. And I'm sitting there and I wind up people watching for, like, the first four or five games that I recruit in the spring because I'm like, oh, my God, these parents are crazy. You know, it's just – it's funny because you would just – I don't like that, you know, and I think I listen to – I watch all the games, and I think there's just a level of professionalism that I think that needs to be there, and it's you know, I obviously there's some homer stuff going on, but there's also a lack of homework. There's a lack of professionalism from that, and I just that part of it could be a little frustrating sometimes. But you know, I listened to Steve Panarelli do our game the other day, and he was great. And of course, he's pulling for us. We know him and everything, but at no time does he wear his jersey in the booth. You know, so I just, it's frustrating because you got to listen to that nonsense. You know that there's things going on that people out there don't know, but you also, you know, it's, you know, everybody's, it is what it is. That you got to consider the source sometimes. So I probably shouldn't have acknowledged the fact of how bad he was at his job, but, you know, I probably should have just let it go. Oh, did that come out loud? I'm sorry, guys.
Well, I had to point it out because I'm trying to get them to let me in the TV booth instead of just the radio booth.
And I don't understand how you're not, to be honest with you. I mean, you know what it is? You're probably not monotone enough.
Last one for me, and I'll let Tom jump in.
He's not good looking.
How's the Beast doing? He missed the game in Boston. He looked like he was limping at the end of the game last week. How's his hamstring doing?
Well, I was actually very scared last game because I thought it was his hamstring again. But it turned out Bunker got him with a slash across the shins that Bunker went to the sideline and actually had a piece of Greg's shin on his stick. It was one of the more disgusting things I've seen. He actually had a piece of skin and blood on the head of his stick. So it was just I don't want to say just a bruise, but Greg will get it. It was a nasty whack on the shins. And I thought the same thing like you thought. I'm like, holy crap, here we go again. His hamstring's going to be a question all season. And it wasn't the hamstring at all. So it was just a shot to the shin. But, you know, he's been, obviously, when he's been, and he was great again, it's a big difference. You know, our offense is getting 60 shots a game because he's getting us the ball 20 times, you know, on the faceoff. You know, and I thought the first game, obviously, I thought Jerry battled his tail off, but I think one of the things that hurt Jerry a little bit was not having Hartzell. You know, because Jerry's more of a guy that utilizes his wings a little bit more than Greg. So, you know, not having, you know, Hartzell, who's probably, you know, in my opinion, he's the best, he's my guy, so I could say it. He's the best LSM in the league. You know, so he's, you know, you lose a little bit there as far as, you know, being able to play it off the ground. So, but we'll have Hartzell back this week. Greg obviously is full go this week. You know, we're going to hold Luke Dupree off till the 30th. So he'll be, his first game will be in Charlotte. And we'll have, this weekend we'll have Walsh at practice, Oberbeck at practice, Olave at practice, and Pouliot, the goalie, and, you know, Mikulinich as well. So we'll have most of our draft picks, minus Pellegrino, Lecky, at practice this weekend for us.
Well, Coach, it's Tom. How's it going?
My man, what's going on?
Speaking of wing play, DiNapoli. And for that matter, Kevin Understein, they both have been huge this year. How has that changed your game plan?
They've been fantastic. Honestly, both of those guys on both sides of the field, you know, they have been, you know, I love that you're talking about those guys because they don't get enough love. I actually was talking to my brother this afternoon. We were just talking about, you know, DNAP, you know, he scored. They're unbelievable in the scrum. Kevin's been, you know, lights out as far as his one-on-one defense as well. You know, it's honestly, it's probably one of those positions that it just, it's, you've got to have great ones to be any good in this league. And, you know, I thought we like to attack other people, you know, and I don't think many people can really do that on ours. I don't think they could do it on Chesapeake's. You know, I think there's teams that are really putting together, and I think you realize, I think it's one of the reasons why it's very difficult to run a ton of two-way middies because, you know, I think that one of the things that we did this past week is, you know, when you have D-middies playing offense, you know, it doesn't really help your offense. And then when you have D-middies playing tired defense, that doesn't help them either. So it's, you know, it's in some regard, having those guys to specialize and do what they do is it's so underrated. Kevin, this is the best I've seen Kevin play. And D-Naps, I mean, Tom, I know you loved him when he was with the Rats. He just, I mean, you know, we've made a lot of moves in the last couple of years. I'm hard-pressed to find a move that's better for us than getting, you know, D-Naps.
Yeah, actually talking with Bunker this week, he asked me how he did, and I said, you know, I thought your performance against Grenlian was as good as anybody's, but DiNapoli absolutely killed you. He was a player in that game. And speaking of the Rattlers, it's understandable you would think Kyle Hartzell's the best LSM because you didn't actually get to see Joel White this season. But,
that's right. Joel White's awesome. I love the way he plays. He's fantastic.
The next question, I'm picking on family. 18 penalty minutes in 5 games. At some point, those are going to hurt you. How do you fix that?
Well, here's one thing, and we had this conversation, him and I, today. I'm going to tell you, has he been ultra-aggressive? Yeah, he has. But I also want to tell you this, and I know, you know, you guys love the game, and I want you to do me a favor. I want you to go back. In 8 of those penalty minutes was on Kevin Cooper when he went helmet-to-helmet on John Austin when we were up 6 goals with a minute to go or a couple minutes to go. And, you know, I don't think anyone's really surprised by those 8 minutes. I actually would have been more surprised if he didn't get them. There is seriously something from the league that's going on, and we're not really sure. I mean, go look at the last penalty of the game on Brian on Ryan Young when he missed Ryan Young altogether. Didn't touch a part of him. And he got a minute for that. Some of the calls are just really, listen, he gets his money's worth on a bunch, but the last 2 or 3 games, it's been comical. You know, some of the, you know, I'm watching guys take two-handed swings across Jojo Moresco's back, but they don't have number 91 on the back. So therefore there's, it's overlooked and it's not that bad, we're told. But listen, it's something that needs to be addressed because if that's the way they're going to call it all year, we certainly have to, you know, we have to be able to do that. And it's, but I mean, you live and die by the sword, you know, and we're going to try to live by it. You know, there's people are, you know, it's, I'm not sure you want to make a living in front of our goal. And I could tell you all guys toned down a bit. You know, I think that, you know, we're letting up under 10 a game based on, I just feel like it's not the most inviting place in front of our cage when you know there's a hammer in there. And something that we've lacked, and like Brian said to me today, so this is not something that, you know, and obviously I've done a terrible job controlling my player, but he's, you know, he's got to tone it down a lot, but, I think at the same token, he's got to find the line and be right on the line as opposed to being way over it. But, you know, I think it's something we, you know, again, the season's young. The season's early. You know, I think he wants to show the guys that he's there for them, and I think they want to show it the same way. You know, and I know I can tell you this. A lot of our play the other night where one of their players took a run at nines, and 91 was as fast as you could turn. Was right there, you know, doing what he does. And that's important on a team. I think, you know, we talk about all the time chemistry in this league and teams that get it. And I think when you have a bunch of guys willing to fight for each other, you know, it kind of changes the team dynamic a lot.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I laughed at the 4th penalty. It set him over in my bets for the weekend, whether he'd be over 3.5, but it was a reputation penalty more than it was anything. You get your first look at Chesapeake this week. How do you game plan for a Dave Connell coached team?
Well, they're a good, you know, they're a great team. You know, they're a great team. I think, you know, I think that 91 is, and I've been talking all week, so I think we're going to have a little bit more familiarity to their, some of their ins and outs. You know, and but I think, you know, like we've told our guys all season long, we can't worry about who's in their lineup. We just got to worry about playing another color jersey. And, you know, nobody's felt that. Everybody in this league has had an opportunity to design their team the way they wanted. We decided to design ours, so we had everybody the whole season. But Dave's teams are always disciplined. They're smart. You know, I'm sure he'll have some kind of game plan. I think I could see them trying to short stick Paul and slide early, and then they'll mix it up, and they'll probably a lot of invert and try to, you know, and just try to do some different stuff. I mean, I think that, you know, they obviously have some concerns based off X, especially if it's officiated correctly, which that is a big if. You know, I think they'll get great goaltending, and, you know, I think we just got to go out and be us. I think that our guys, when we've been good, we've been really, really good. So I think we just got to try to be, you know, they'll have Westy this week. They'll have Dino will be there. You know, Rice, Rubior, Ben Hunt, McCready's. They'll have most of their guys. Most of their defense will be there. Evans will be there. You know, so, you know, I know Cottle wants to act like he's, you know, he's just a poor little underdog there, but that's just his way of protecting himself in case things don't go his way. So, and I can speak that way because one of my good friends. But, you know, I think they're always a good team. We haven't beaten them in 3 years. You know, our goal is we just want to be 6-0 at the end of the day. You know, and I think we're due to play a more complete game than we have the last couple weeks.
And last one for me, and I'll let James jump back on you. And, I mean, you got a couple of years in with this team now. You've had a couple of these players for most of your tenure. Who's the most improved guy on the roster since you've been there?
You know, it's funny. I probably have to say Greg, and that's, you know, just because he just seems to be getting better. He seems to be getting better every year, but, you know, I don't know if we have necessarily one guy. I think Palisek's been a nice little story, kind of unheralded and kind of came in and has earned his stripes. I think Gibson has adjusted his game really well. And he's been somebody, you know, JoJo. I mean, look at JoJo, couldn't get a shot off his first 4 or 5 games in the league. It's kind of strange to call JoJo Marasco one of the most improved guys. I don't know if we necessarily have one or two guys. I think we're playing. The only thing I can say is in my time there, this is the best team lacrosse that we've played on both ends. I think overall as a team, we've kind of, everybody seemed to have got it going together.
Coach, back to being James. I do want to ask you one quick question about your locker room, because it's interesting having as many young players on one side of the ball and veterans on the other side. Whenever you walk in the locker room at halftime, what's the locker room like? Who is going to be the guy who is going to rally the troops? Who's going to be a guy who is going to, you know, make a joke? I just kind of want to know what that whole situation is like, if you don't mind giving us an insight as far as what things are like there.
It's awesome. I mean, honestly, it's hilarious. First of all, the music, generally by the time I get in there doing a halftime, the music's blasting. They're dancing. They're freaking going crazy. So, you know, usually my brother's chirping at somebody, making fun of somebody. They're chirping back at him. Usually, you know, the offensive guys are kind of in one corner. I got you know, Drew, my brother, Fletcher Holmes, and Hartsey is, you know, in one corner with Dnap and Arthur Stein, and they're, you know, some of the guys are getting stretched out. I think, you know, ultimately we'll you know, as coaches, we're going to go through a couple tweaks, things we're going to do. But it's very loose, and I think that's one of the things that, it, you know, I think our guys are so serious, and it's so important to them that loose atmosphere in there has helped guys relax and just kind of play you know, as a unit. But it's not church, you know, it's not a bunch of guys sitting around staring at each other, whispering about things they got to do. It's usually a matter of, and luckily, listen, we've had some great first halves, so we've been in control a lot of these halves, you know, where guys can kind of, you know, their mentality could be a little different. But it's, again, this is a group that really likes each other. And I think when you have that, I think the talent speaks for itself. You know, and I think for us, it's a matter of just keep things, you know, we're trying to tweak things as the game's going on, make quick adjustments, get it right to them right there. And again, we don't want to outsmart ourselves as coaches either. I mean, we do a lot of things really well. Let's stick to doing what we do well and not try to outsmart ourselves. You know, and that's something where, you know, that we've been very cognizant of. You know, the team dynamic in our locker room is awesome, and it's been very refreshing. It's been fun.
Well, that's awesome. Well, continued success to you guys. I think we all think that you are awesome as far as being a coach, being an interview. You're very forthcoming. And so for your entire team, we wish you nothing but continued success. Thanks for taking out the time, and thank you for making this a really pleasurable experience for all three of us. So best of luck moving forward, and we wish you best of luck.
And you guys are great, too. I just want to let you guys know I appreciate everything that you guys do for the sport. And, Tim, I'm going to make a call. I'm going to get you as a color commentary. Tom, we're going to get you a flight out to New York. Okay, we're going to take care of you guys. And listen, any kinks in the armor that you find, instead of putting them on the radio, if you guys are really my friends, you can text them to me. This way I can fix things before everyone knows where we're bad.
Tom and I will put together a scouting report, and we'll send it over to you.
You guys are the best. All right, boys.
Thanks once again,
to
Coach Molina. Thanks, Coach. We hope to talk to you soon. Once again, that was Coach Molina, New York Lizards. As always, kind of the best interview that we have, and we have it way too often for the talent that we have, no matter what Coach Molina says. And I want to kind of get back to the New York Lizards because we started talking about them before, and even though – you want to paint this team as far as rose-colored glasses are concerned, one has to wonder, are they going to go undefeated? And I think that now, they're 5 games in. They haven't necessarily had the toughest test moving forward. But, Tom, I want to ask you, just because of what Spleen has said as far as how this team has meshed, how realistic is an undefeated season? We saw Denver do it and then get destroyed in a playoff game against a Charlotte team that no one gave anyone credit for. This is a team that has a lot of superstars that are really playing well together. And so I just want to know kind of what you make of this team, because it seems like the big thing for this team is their offense, and their defense seems to be kind of holding up on the back end. What chances do you give this team as far as an undefeated season are concerned?
It's early to talk about that, but I have no problem saying that they are far and away the best team in the league, and I would put them as a favorite in every game they play in. Hartzell goes down, they bring in Michael Scudin, and they haven't really missed a beat. They have a ridiculous rookie class coming in. Ryan Walsh, I'm hoping we get to see him this weekend. That was a question I forgot to ask the coach, but that's, I mean, I watched that Colgate UNC game, and his game is tailor-made for the MLL, so we should get to see him. And I know other teams have tried to get him away from coach, and it just isn't happening. And, you know, Hakeem Lecky's a guy I've talked to coach about numerous times. You can't short-stick him in the MLL. You just can't, because there is not a slide coming, and he's going to be 3 feet past you by the time you're able to make a play on him. Kevin Drew might be the only short stick D mid in the league who can keep up with him step for step, and that's probably not going to happen in a settled 6-on-6 situation. So they've got some players that can step in. This roster is so deep. We haven't even seen a guy that at least 5 GMs have told me is going to be an all-star in Luke Dupree, and they're still the best defense in the league. They're still the best offense in the league. They're, you know, Boston had 2 shots at them in a row with Boston's I'm not going to say full roster because they were missing rookies, but they still, you know, they played them great in the first game. They really, really did a lot, but the second game wasn't as close. New York kind of controlled that second game. So is that maybe their only weakness is if Gremlin gets hurt? That's the only spot I've seen so far in all their games where they've shown anything where they weren't dominant. Was they lose Gremlin, Brian Spolina gets inverted behind the cage repeatedly. Coach is saying with an injured groin, I'm saying with slow feet. But at the same time, that's what they've had to do. But Boston doesn't get those possessions if Gremlin is dominating at the X like he did in the second game. So are other teams just going to really hope that he gets hurt or wears down? I don't think that works, because I think with better preparation, Jerry Raganese is still a starting caliber faceoff player in this league. He's just as good as some of these other guys that are starting for other teams.
That is an Eric O'Brien by far.
Well, Eric O'Brien aside, Tim, you were actually really close to the closest game New York had as far as the game in Boston. What did you see from this team? And what do you think is going to be the thing that's going to take this behemoth down at this point in time?
Well, first of all, Coach Spolina and Tom were both right. The faceoff X had a lot to do with it. Craig Bunker played very well in that game, and the wing play from guys like Scott Ratliff and Brent Adams was very good for Boston in that matchup, and they were able to get those extra possessions that normally, like Tom was saying, you don't usually get against the New York Wizards when Gremlin is in and is healthy. And the other aspect of it is just like Tom was saying, and he and I talked about it right after the game. I called him I was texting with him when I was walking down from the booth. Brian Spolina, groin injury or no groin injury, was on the hook for probably four goals. I mean, Owen Bly took him to the rack at least three different times from X behind the cage. And if you can isolate like that on Spolina and be able to have a dodger, a guy who can dodge like an Owen Bly or the like, that's probably the biggest weakness for them. I think that they have enough defenders, especially when they get Dupree, that they're going to be able to accommodate and adjust for that. So I don't know that it's really going to be a roadmap in the future as to how to beat them, but it's certainly one of the main reasons why Boston was able to get as close as they did. But the biggest thing about New York and whether or not they can go undefeated and how to beat them, it's going to come down to their health. You know, they got a lot of guys on the roster, and Tom, you know, talked about the Hartzell injury that's already happened. Gremlin's already been nicked up. Rabel's a guy who has been hurt multiple times, and the last couple of years hasn't had the ability to go the full season without getting hurt. They have some other guys. You know, Poske's a guy who's had some injuries. These are guys that are a big part of what they're doing right now, and if they get hurt, if they lose a guy like Hartzell, a guy like Gremlin, a guy like Rabel for an extended period of time, then yeah, you know, maybe they don't go undefeated. Maybe, you know, they lose a game or two. But clearly this is the best team in the league. And we talked about this roster from Jump Street with how stacked they are. And you know, even when if somebody gets hurt, and Tom talked about it with Scooten, next man up type mentality. You know, this is a team that has bodies. You know, they've got as deep of a roster as I think I've ever seen in the MLL. And they've got guys, you know, a guy like a Mike Stone, who would probably start on most teams in the league, who is really a role player on this team. They've got a guy like Cody Jamison on the bench. Or he hasn't obviously dressed for them yet, but he's another guy that's on this roster that could easily start for another team. Will Harrington, a guy who is a talented midfielder, hasn't really gotten his breakout opportunity yet, but he's played for Ohio, he's played for Chesapeake, he's kind of got everything that you're looking for in an MLL guy. He can dodge, he's got the shot from distance if he needs it. This team is stacked, and even with injuries, it's going to be tough to beat them. I mean, they got a guy like Matt Gibson, who's rotating in and out, and we've seen how good he's been in the past as a rookie of the year, as a dominant-type player at the attack position, and they've just got players on top of players in New York.
Well, the entire season should be kind of interesting because New York is obviously one of the better teams in the league, and we've seen what this roster can do. And to kind of illustrate exactly what other teams are going through, I want to welcome in Kieran McArdle. And Kieran, first off, thanks for taking the time out on a Tuesday night. But this is your first season as far as being an MLL player, as far as not having any sort of collegiate or any other aspects. How has this season been different for you moving forward and being a part of the Florida Launch team as far as making this transition for yourself?
I think it's a little weird, you know, coming off the season, not having the whole off season of, you know, I was playing in college and going through that. So that was a little weird for me, but I tried to still go practice with St. John's and try to keep the stick in my hand as much as I could, you know, working out 5 days a week and things like that. So making sure when the season came around, I was in good shape, both physically and you know, running wise. So when it came to the season, it wasn't too much of a difference. It was just a little bit more experience, you know, having the first year under my belt and the guys around me having a whole year of us clicking and things like that. So the transition's a little bit easier this year. It's weird not coming straight from a college season because that's what I was used to last year.
You had the distinct opportunity to play under Casey Powell, and he's obviously a legend in this game. What type of things has he told you on a week-to-week basis that have been one of the things that you've been able to kind of manifest moving forward? Like, what has he been able to tell you on a week-to-week basis being in a locker room with a legend in your first couple years? What's that been like?
It's been awesome. You know, you see the passion that he has for the game, even at the age 39, he still goes out there every day trying to win a championship. That's our goal, and that's what we strive for every day. You know, just throughout the week, how you got to take care of your body and keep the stick in your hand and things like that, and then you should be prepared for when the game comes. And he's just been a great mentor for me, seeing how he conducts himself on and off the field and the way he conducts himself throughout the lacrosse world.
Well, before I throw you to Tim and Tom, we're going to ask you a bunch of technical questions. What's your guys' locker room like? Who's your biggest clown? Who's the guy who either has the biggest, you know, effect on you guys playing loud music or whatever? What can you give us as far as insight in the Florida Launch locker room?
I would say the two jokesters would have to be Cunningham and Brooks. You know, those guys are always good for a good laugh. But when game time comes, we're ready to go. And, you know, guys like Queener and Casey really get the locker room going. You have Tucker Durkin, who's given great speeches before the game and getting us really fired up and really taking on that captain role. So it's a good mix of guys, you know, keeping you going, keeping you having a good laugh. And then when we have to get serious, those guys are putting their game faces on and we're ready to strap it up and go.
Before I give you to Tim, and this is the last one I'll ask you, we all met Queener, and we all know he's kind of a psychopath. is there any story you can give us that's appropriate for radio that involves Queener? Because we all know the guy's crazy.
I mean, he's just a great teammate to have on your team. His intensity shows on the field, but that just shows how much he really wants to win and how much passion he has for the game. Story-wise, not too much that I could probably say, but he's just an awesome teammate to have. He always has your back no matter what the scenario is or what the situation is, and when game time comes, you know, he's going to give it everything he has, and he just wants everyone on the team to give it everything they got, and that's all he asks for every game.
Hey, Kieran, it's Tim Thomas. Now, last week, you guys host Ohio, home game for you guys, and you get off the snide. You get out there and you get that first win, and obviously it's still a young season, and there's a long way to go, but how important is it after kind of being close in the first few weeks and not being able to close it out to get that first win under your belt?
That's just huge. I mean, getting the monkey off your back after three straight losses and to start off the season 0-3 is real tough, and we know that we couldn't have taken another loss there. We knew that we had to get the ball rolling and get our first win and make sure we didn't go 0-4. We digged ourselves a little bit of a hole, but we knew we couldn't go 0-4 and dig it too deep. So we knew that we had to get the ball rolling and get off to a winning streak and hopefully keep it hot.
Now, obviously, you had success last season. Personally, you end up being the Rookie of the Year. You really kind of found your legs and were able to take over a little bit in the second half of the MLL season. How has that affected you in year two? Are you seeing that you're getting that early slide now, or that you're drawing a double earlier than maybe you were last year?
Yeah, I think guys know a little bit about me, you know, my game. They probably didn't know much about me coming out of college. Most of the guys probably never played St. John's or followed St. John's much. They probably just heard about my name. They didn't really know my style of play. So after the first season, yes, it was a little bit more of a target on my back. And that's just usually what I was used to during the college season. So I knew I was going to draw an early double or an early slide, and I really had to work on getting the ball out of my stick. And I think that's why you're seeing a little bit more assists from me this season.
And you've had a little bit of a rotation down there on the attack, and that's kind of the way the MLL goes, especially in the early parts of the season. You see different guys working it down in the attack or at the midfield. And who, out of the new guys that you've played with this year, who do you think you've had the best chemistry with so far?
Out of the new guys, I would say Snowitz have been having a good impact. He's always moving off ball, dodging down the field, pushing it to the attack. His lacrosse IQ is up there. So out of the new guys, I would say probably Snow. I mean, there's not too many other new guys out there. I mean, Brooks and Earl played with us at the end of the season. Those guys are phenomenal for us. And, you know, having Snow in there is really a good balance to the midfield.
And last one for me, Stan Ross, his second year as a head coach, and how has he been in terms of being a head coach, and how has he helped you transition to the pro game?
Oh, he's been great for me. He's been by my side, you know. Even when I have a bad game, he's just trying to boost me up and telling me what I could have done better. And if I have a good game, he's right there right after the game, you know, giving me a high five and saying great job. And throughout practice, he's given me pointers and helped me make the transition to the professional level.
Hey, Kieran, it's Tom. One of the things we've kind of harped on with Florida is you guys don't really get as much of a training camp as others. As a Florida player, do you feel left out or disappointed in that?
I mean, yeah, we wanted probably another week or two of training camp, you know, just to really click as a team. That could have translated to a little bit of a slow start for us. So, I mean, after the couple of games, we seem to got the ball rolling, and hopefully we just keep going from there. we would like to have, hopefully next year, another week or two of training camp so we don't get off to that slow start.
And on the flip side of that, I mean, I watched you play in college a few times. The main game was probably the times you played Syracuse. And you looked in those games like the best player on the field. And you step into the game and you got off to a hot start in Major League Lacrosse. Is that just because you fit with this team or because your style of play translated quickly?
I think probably a little bit of both. You know, I just try to go out there and play my game, and it happens to fit what team I'm on. And I think I could go out there and transition with any team, but it really helps having Casey and Cunningham and Brooks and Earl and all those guys by your side to help you out. But I hope my game could translate on any team. Not that I would ever want to go somewhere else because I love it down in Florida, but I think my style of play just made a good transition and made it easy for me with the guys around me.
And you're, a volume shooter. You take a lot of shots a game, and it's obviously worked out to produce a lot of goals, but is that something that just is reflective in the way the offense works, or have you always been somebody who needed 10-plus shots so you could get going and get your points?
You got to shoot the score, so you know. I think in college my role was, you know, I had to take a good amount of shots. I was doing a lot of the dodging for my team and also feeding. So when I go to the cage, if I draw the slide, then I move it. If I have an open shot, I take it and I move off ball. And if I think it's a good shot, I'll pull it. You can't be scared to shoot in the game of lacrosse, you know. So I just like to take the opportunities that I have.
And last one for me, the team brings in the Thompsons. Now you got both of them coming. Hopefully you'll have them both in a short amount of time. But your attack unit with Cunningham and Powell and you has been fairly successful. I mean, you guys have put up points. Is there any part of you that's saying, you know, we don't need those guys, I got this?
I mean, anytime you get a chance to play with both of the Thompsons, you want to welcome them in. They have great lacrosse IQ, and their games could fit in anywhere. You know, Thompson's moving inside Miles, and then you have Wild dodging and moving off ball and things like that. So anytime you get a chance to play with them, you definitely welcome them with arms wide open. But we'll just have to find ways to get it done with them in our lineup and move forward.
Kieran, last question for me. This is back to being James. The Florida locker room must be an interesting place for you guys. I just want to get a little insight. Like, if there's a class clown, or if there is a guy who is just playing some weird music that everyone else is laughing about. Like, I'm really struggling to get an insight as far as that's concerned. Like, who's the guy who is playing pranks in the locker room? So I know there's one guy for every locker room.
I'm sure you could guess that's Queener playing the funny music and dancing around like a crazy maniac. He really gets the locker room going, and before the game he gets us fired up. As far as clowning around, he'll clown around, but then when it's time for game time, he's strapping it up and ready to go.
Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on. Thanks for taking a little time on a Tuesday, and best of luck for the rest of the season, and for Tim and Tom, hopefully you do really well, and thanks again, and take care.
All right, appreciate you having me. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. It's Kieran McCardle coming on with us, and I really want to focus on a couple things with you guys, Tim and Tom, because there's a logjam of teams that are kind of, you know, situated themselves at the bottom of the standings. There's a lot of 1-3 teams. And one thing I wanted to ask you guys this week, now that we have both you guys on, is your most dangerous team moving forward, because a lot of people don't really give a lot of credit to a couple of these 1-3 rosters. And you look at a team like Charlotte, they've been in every game, even though Tim and Joe and everyone else don't want to give them a whole lot of credit, but
Well, I mean, they've been in every game, as in they've shown up to the stadium and played. But whether or not they've had a chance to win is totally different.
Well, look, two overtime games. Like, I don't think that that's something that we can speak to. That's a huge negative.
Two overtime wins? No. One, I guess. We'll go with one.
Boston's been in every game, too. It doesn't make them good. The answer to your question, which team is the most dangerous, it's Ohio, by far. Ohio is, out of the 1-3 teams, is by far the most talented team, by far the most dangerous team. They just keep, you know, sending guys like Eric O'Brien out there for some unknown reason. When if they would trade and get a guy like Jerry Raggy, they don't even have to trade. They could just sign him off the practice squad. If they could figure out their face-off situation, I think that they could easily turn it around, and they are easily the most dangerous of the 1-3 teams.
Well, all right. Well, my question is obviously destroyed, but at the same time, like, there are a lot of teams that are sitting there at 1-3. Ohio might be the team that is the most underachieving team. However, in the future, Tom, what's the team that you're looking forward to as far as a team that can make a jump from being a 1-3 team to being a playoff and maybe a future contender for the league title?
I like Tim's answer. Ohio has been dangerous. Once Marcus Holman gets it figured out, gets back healthy, they're going to be a good team. I mean, they're so much better than they've played. And I like Florida. I mean, I think Florida is not only going to be fun to watch, but I think their offense will get it figured out. I like them better as a team with one face-off guy, with just Chris Mattis. Happy birthday, by the way, Chris, if you're happy to listen. I like them better with that system. I like what they're able to do. And if they can get that offense going, I mean, the Thompsons showed when they were at Albany that a lot of turnovers isn't going to affect them. I think a shot clock is going to make them play faster, play stronger. Now you've got two creative playmakers lined up with Casey Powell, who's also still very creative and strong, and a tremendous shooter in McArdle. And Brooks, who's playing arguably his best that I've seen him play in a couple of seasons. You got a team that offensively can do it with anybody. And you can disguise a lot of defensive efficiencies with great offense. So the only team that they don't match up well against is New York. And that's because I think Grinling is just that much better than every face-off guy in the league right now. That, okay, Mattis is having a good season. He can go 50% against six guys in the league, but that seventh guy is gonna thump him. So New York will control possessions in that game, but Florida had a slow start. They still have some question marks. I still don't love their defense, but I think they'll get it figured out, and I think they're going to gain a lot from the players that haven't joined that team yet.
Well, one interesting aspect of exactly what we've been looking at this year is the face-off X. And it has been very apparent that there are the haves and the have-nots when we look at the X at this point in time in the season. And it seems like the teams that are doing better in the standings seem to have the more experienced guys as far as the X is concerned. And the big question is, a team like Ohio, a team like Charlotte, and a team like Chesapeake that doesn't have the necessary huge player who is going to be the Greg Grinling, who is going to be the Anthony Kelly. And so, Tim, being a former X guy, what do you make of how big this situation is going to be moving forward into the playoffs?
It's huge. You have to have a guy. They call it a face-off specialist for a reason, especially going into the playoffs. You know, Dave Cottle's a guy that will go into games without dressing a face-off guy. And we saw him do it a couple weeks ago where he'll trot out a couple LSMs and have them take draws. But when they were winning championships, you know, he was picking up the phone and calling Alex Smith and making sure that he was there to suit up for championship weekend back in the day, because he knows how important that position is. And we've seen a changing of the guard. You know, we've seen, you know, Alex Smith is gone. Chris Eck, now retired. Anthony Kelly, playing very well, but getting to the end of the road. And we've seen a changing of the guard at the X. And you know, guys like a Craig Bunker, guys like an Ortolani, a Chris Mattis, who have paid their dues and played for multiple teams and worked their ways up through practice squads, are now getting their opportunity and getting their shot. There's not a lot of guys that come right out of college and have success. Excuse me. It's not easy to find that guy. You know, Brendan Fowler, fantastic this year. One of the lone bright spots for the Charlotte Hounds. But even he had struggles last season coming out of college, and he's picked it up a little quicker than guys usually do. But there's a big jump at the Faceoff X coming out of college to the pro game, and there's a lot of different intricacies that are involved there. And Ohio kills themselves year after year by sticking with Eric O'Brien because he's an Ohio State Buckeye, because he's been there and shows up at practice all the time. It's brutal because this team is as talented as just about any other team in the league on paper, except at the faceoff dot. And they've tried to make some moves and juggled it around a little bit. We saw them, I think they lined up three or four different guys last season. And you know, they make the moves and bring guys in, but they always go back to Eric O'Brien. And it always drives me crazy. The Faceoff X is a huge, important deal. And like Tom said, it's nobody's beating Gurenlian, and that gives the New York Wizards a huge advantage.
Look, I do not want to pile on Eric O'Brien. And I know
yes,
that
you
we
do.
Have done that.
Yes, you do.
No. I don't, because he had a fan section in the Ohio game I was at, and they were actually kind of funny. But, Tom, I want to throw this back to you about Ohio, because this is a team that we all thought was going to be championship contender. We all thought the offense was going to be dynamic, and you and I were both there in a game against Denver, and they didn't win a faceoff for, I mean, almost three quarters. It was unbelievable how inept that team was.
How inept it was?
I'm saying the team at this point in time, because they threw a lot of people out there. So, Tom, what I want to ask is just this Ohio team is my big question for you, because they are at the bottom of the standings and they are the team most likely to rise to the top. But you see them doing that. You see this team having the talent in the spaces that they need to have right now rising up, because as of now, you've seen a good sample size for them. Like, what do you make of the Ohio machine?
They've got correctable problems. If I'm going to pile on Eric O'Brien quick, well, he hasn't taken enough draws to have hurt them at this point. I mean, he's only taken 37 draws on the season. I flat asked Bear Davis when we were in Ohio if he happens to own the team, because that's the only explanation for why he's still on it. But everybody will tell you, if you don't have Gurenlian or Kelly, you don't have anybody. I mean, that was exactly Bear Davis's reply, was if you don't have those two guys, you don't have anybody. Ortolani came out and had a good game his first game back. I'm excited about that. I think Fowler is in that conversation. He's facing off at 60% this season. So there's a few guys that are the cream of the crop, and then there's everybody else. Anthony Kelly is still doing his thing. He's still ridiculously good. But Gurenlian is 80%. You can't even fathom that. I mean, he is 80% from the faceoff X so far this season. He's only played in four games, but that's ridiculous. And you know, you could say he's 80%, in two games and 20 draws and 40 draws. No, he's 80% over 100 draws, 106 to be exact. That's a ridiculous stat. It's unmatched. He is he's the MVP of the league right now. There's no question.
Well, one thing that I wanted to get into with you guys is this week's schedule, because there are a couple games that are really exciting. And for me, one of the games that's truly exciting, and I hate to keep on harping back on the Ohio Machine and the Charlotte Hounds, but it's the Ohio – Tim, I want to toss it to you first. Is the Ohio-Charlotte game like a loser-leaves-town match? Like, one of these teams is going to lose, and so just get out. Like, don't even bother with the rest of your season, basically. What do you make of that matchup heading in this weekend?
I don't think we're quite at loser leave town yet, but this is where you want to start making some moves. This is where you want to start, you know, turning things around. And I talked a little bit about it on Laxster.com this week. You know, Denver's sitting there at 2-2, so it's not like at 1-3 your season's over at this point. The whole bottom half of the league isn't playing very well. So it's still plenty of time to change things around and turn the tide, so to speak. So I don't think it's quite that dire yet. But I think the message in both locker rooms absolutely is now's the time that we got to turn this around. And, you know, we talk about it every year. These two teams came into the league together. They're always going to be tied together. Whether they want to be compared to each other or not, they're going to be. And I think the fan bases have that rivalry. And that this is a game that the fans get up for. This is a game that the players get up for. At least from the Ohio perspective, there's not many original Charlotte Hounds left. But this is a big game on the calendar for both these teams.
I'm going to completely ignore a bunch of other games. And, Tim, I'm going to give you a chance to hop in on this other matchup, because I think this is the big matchup of the weekend. It's Chesapeake, New York. I mean, there's a loser leaves town match, and as far as my opinion is concerned, but you know, the Charlotte Ohio matchup right now, I don't know if Charlotte can match up with Ohio, and I honestly goodness think that Charlotte's going to lose, but that's neither here nor there. But I think the big matchup that I want to get both you guys' opinion on is the Chesapeake at New York matchup, because Chesapeake has been a team that in the past we've seen a lot of trades similar to New York acquire big talent. And now we're kind of seeing what they can do. And much to the grit of this show, a guy like Joe Von Miller seemed like he's been pretty integral in what Chesapeake's been able to do. And, Tom, I want to know what you think about the Chesapeake-New York matchup. And is this a real testament to how New York can possibly be an undefeated team, or do you think they're going to have kind of their way with Chesapeake?
Well, Coach Foligno put it well and said they haven't beaten him in three seasons. I mean, that was something I did not know. And that's a big deal. I mean, this team has – Coach Cottle finds a way to beat him. He finds a way to beat Coach Foligno. That's not something you want on your record. So New York needs to get this win. Chesapeake needs to get this win to show not only themselves but the rest of the league that New York is vulnerable. And both teams have played well. I thought Chesapeake really, really played well this past week. I mean, it's one of those things that we probably have two of, if not the two best coaches in the league right now going at each other. One's a personnel master with his ability to get his guys up and get his guys to play for him, and the other one is a chess master in X's and O's and getting, you know, players to in the right position to make plays. So it'll be interesting to see what the guys coming back for Chesapeake, you know, we alluded to Westy being back, what they bring. I mean, yes, they're coming off of a season, but the game is completely different. I'm not too worried about Westervelt, but he still isn't familiar with this version of the Bayhawks yet.
Tip, I want to put the coach hat on you. I want you to be Coach Spulina. You've got Chesapeake coming into town. Your team is undefeated. Are there any changes you make, or do you kind of let your team do what they've been doing? Like, what's your game plan?
No, absolutely not. We're not. If I'm in New York and I'm Coach Spulina, we're not changing our game plan based on the opponent, because I think the opponents have the game plan for us. I think the New York Wizards are the big dog in the room, and they're the ones that need to dictate the pace. They're the ones that need to dictate the style. I think that teams need to work around them and what they do, as opposed to vice versa. I agree with the fact that I think this is the marquee game this week. I think this is the test. And if you're New York, you're going out there to get that win. And you're going out there to, you know, continue doing what you've been doing and stay the course and get the win over Cotto, like Elena had mentioned. If you're Chesapeake, you're going out to legitimize your record. Because like I said in the opening, I think the wins that they have over Florida and Charlotte haven't impressed. I think if you go out and you upset the Wizards, obviously that changes the tune of that.
Tom, going right back to you, you're obviously really close with Coach Spulina, and I want to throw you in the Coach Cotto role. You have an undefeated team staring at you on the other side of the field. What do you do that's different against New York, and what do you do to maximize your team's efforts?
You're going to need to play fast in this game. You're going to need to capitalize on early offense. One of the things that we didn't talk about with Coach Spulina, New York has really, really outshot their opponents. And not all of them have been great shots. They've taken a number of possession shots, which is they just launch it over the cage. And, you know, if they hit the goal, great. If they don't, well, we still have the ball back. So Chesapeake is going to need to a way to find, I guess, more scoring chances in this game than New York, because Drew Adams has played well, but I don't think he's really been tested. This team hasn't been tested by anyone. And, you know, the Bayhawks have the Dodgers and the shooters to make plays, and you bring in a guy like Drew Westervelt, who is a proven scorer and a proven shooter, and he can, you know, he can make a defense look silly. And it's going to be how they attack this team. But not only that, you know, Chesapeake, if Evans is healthy and Evans can go, they're probably one of the few teams that does have the defensive personnel to match up. It's a matter of how they do it and how well they do it.
Well, this might be the most interesting matchup of the weekend as far as New York Chesapeake is concerned. Another matchup of the weekend seems to be, you know, really pitting two of the teams that we all care about against each other. It's going to be Boston against Rochester. And so I want to get you guys' input as far as the Rattlers and the Cannons are concerned. Tim, I'm going to go to you first, because you obviously are going to be there. What do you anticipate with the Rattlers coming into Boston, and Boston playing pretty well so far this season? Not a whole lot of people really anticipated Boston being as good as they've been. What do you anticipate this game being like?
I expect kind of much the same that we've seen from Boston so far this season. I think Rochester, like I said earlier, I think one of their problems this year is that chemistry and that fire hasn't really been there on defense yet for them. And they haven't looked like the defensive team that they looked like last season, and I think that's going to allow for Boston to hang around, and that's one thing that Boston's been able to do in every game this season. They've been able to hang around. Denver let them hang around week one, and it ultimately bit Denver in the behind. They were able to hang around with New York. they were able to hang around with Charlotte and force overtime. And this is a team that has come from behind and closed and erased, you know, 3- and 4-goal leads regularly. And they've utilized the 2-point goal better than anybody so far this year and have been able to keep things tight. But they also haven't been able to finish. They haven't been able to close. And it's been a huge struggle for them. And they've made mental errors at key opportunities in the game, and they haven't been able to finish. And if I'm being honest, I'm expecting the same thing in this game. I think Rochester has had more of a killer instinct, has been able to close out games, and Boston hasn't. So I expect a close game. I expect a hard-fought game. I think as constituted right now that these teams are playing pretty close to the same level of lacrosse, but I think Rochester gets the edge because they've been able to close out games that Boston hasn't.
Tom, Rochester gave the defending champions a pretty good, really just a slashing. What do you think this game is going to mean this past week in Boston with the team from Rochester? I know you're a big fan, and what are you guys going to do against Sims Boyd?
Well, I don't want to suspend what Tim said, but we're 4 games in and they have yet to look like $1 million. They're clearly missing their first round pick. It's just a team that, I don't know. They're missing Will Manny. I think he is their energy on offense. I think that's made a difference. They're a high effort team that appears to be missing a piece. Rochester plays more of a laid back style. I mean, they never look like they're pressing really hard. They just make plays. And you know, playmaker for playmaker in this game, I think Rochester definitely outguns them at just about every position. And, you know, Boston, they've been better than I thought they would be. And I'm happy about that. But they still don't have anybody who's they're lighting up the scoreboard. Sebald is great in flashes, but he's been required to play maybe too much defense, and his shooting percentage is not good. Emela has been a revelation for them, but he's kind of their only guy on attack with Manny on the IR. And, okay, they were going to bring in Tucker this weekend. He's a two-way guy. He should have some talent. He's a big-bodied guy, but, you know, he wasn't all that great at Virginia. And he was drafted really early, and now you're adding a guy that, okay, he's probably going to be popular with this team, but nobody likes the guy whose dad got him a job. And that's what happened there. But Glessner is going to be a talent for them. And, you know, this attack unit, if it's Emela, Glessner, and Manny, is completely different than what we've seen for them so far this season. But I still think they don't have anybody I see on that roster that can man up on Jordan Wolf on a consistent basis. They don't have anybody who can cover Jordan McIntosh the way he's been playing in his first 2 games back. You know, Mike Manley's going to be able to shut them down. And as much as Bunker's a friend and a buddy, the way that unit played, I thought he played decent in that game against Redley. But the way that unit played was very poor. And you know, you get Joel White and John Nicasio coming in on the wing for Ortolani and Poppleton, and Boston doesn't have an answer for that.
Bunker over Ordo any day.
Well, I figured you're going to take a lot more offense to the Tucker conversation, but that's neither here nor there. But Tim, Tom, we've played a lot of games this season. It doesn't feel like it, but we've actually played almost a third of the games coming through this season. And my question to you guys now is just the obvious question that I don't really know if anyone else has but me, but Tim, I want to know your MVP through the first couple weeks, because we haven't got the NLO guys in. We haven't got the collegiate guys in. But there are a lot of guys who are vying for jobs right now. And there are a lot of guys who are making their impact known. And so my big question to both you guys, and Tim, like I said, I'm going to throw it to you first. Who is your MVP throughout the course of the first, I don't know, 17 games of the season?
For me, it's Jordan Wolf. I think that Jordan Wolf's the only reason why the Rattlers are where they are right now. I think he changes the dynamic of that team. Even when he's not the centerpiece, he changes the approach that other teams take against them. And I think he's a big reason why they are sitting there at 3-2 above 500 as opposed to being below 500.
Well, tell you what, I'm going to throw it back at you, Tim. Who is the guy who should make an MLL roster who might not have made it had it not been for the other extenuating circumstances? Who's the guy who's made your most, your biggest impact that you didn't really think was going to?
I don't know that I didn't think he was going to, but I think Davey Umalo, like Tom said, has earned a job. I think he's a guy that has been on practice squads and has tried to find his niche. I think he fits well in Boston. I think he's got more emotion than I've seen in a lot of guys. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who gets fired up on just about every play, it's Davey Umalo, and he's a guy that gives you 110%. And I'm slightly biased because I've got to see him live and in person in three home games already this season where I'm right there at field level in Foxborough, and I've got to see the intensity that he brings. He's a guy that lays it all out on the line, and I think he's earned and he's shown that he can be a starter in this league.
I think Davey Umalo is a really good candidate for what you're talking about. Couldn't believe what the Hounds did with his entire status, but that's obviously beyond my pay grade, I guess, as far as this whole sport is concerned.
The main ticket was too much.
I know, but you're paying for Hawkins to come in from California, and I don't get it. Either way, neither here nor there. Tom, same question to you, because there are a lot of these guys who really right now need to make their impact felt when they have the opportunity. There are a lot of guys I know that you've talked about with me off the air. Who is somebody who has made the impact on, as far as you're concerned, before all these guys come in the next couple weeks?
I hate that you make me pick one, because Jack Rice has been ridiculous. Greg Malaw in Denver has been equally as good. Both have 9 goals in 4 games. They both have really played well. Patrick Haberson, I think he's been fantastic. Another Denver guy. Kind of all over the field, playing whatever role they need him to play. I mean, he is a little guy, and he just is battling for a position. If Denver doesn't play them when their players return, both of those guys are going to get snatched up by somebody as the season goes on. Those guys are going to find roster spots for next season and get a chance to do it all over again. But I mean, a number of guys have really found minutes early and meaningful minutes, and it'll be interesting to see what happens when everybody's back after the All-Star break.
Well, we only have 6 minutes left, and I want to get each one of you guys, if you have a upset pick for this week, because there are a couple games that might be a little shady as far as anyone else is concerned. Tom, I'm gonna throw to you first. Is there any game this week that you think things are going to go the opposite way than everyone else is going to think?
You know, I took your Hounds last week. I took them, and I regret it every minute of it.
We all do.
But how about Florida? If I'm picking an upset, because I think it's New York. I think it's Ohio. I think it's Rochester. I like Florida. They're playing at home. That would be the team I think is the most likely upset in this situation. And I just think they're riding a hot streak against the Denver team that, you know, despite the guys I talked about, still isn't complete and still has not impressed me defensively.
Well, there is one section of what we're going through, and I also want to toss this to Tim. And before I toss it to Tim, I do want to say the fact that we all need to take this with a grain of salt, considering the fact that the Boston sports area is all inflicted with the fact that, like, I don't know if you guys are inflating some grippy balls or whatever, but what is your upset pick for the week?
My upset pick of the week, I was thinking of going with Florida as well, because I think Denver's defense has been suspect, and I think that Jesse Schwartzman has been terrible. But in order to get a different angle on it, I'm going to go with Charlotte over Ohio, because I do think Charlotte is the underdog. But I think Brendan Fowler is going to dominate every face-off guy that Ohio rolls out there. And I think that with the extra possessions from Fowler, it gives, you know, the Hounds an opportunity to really capitalize on an Ohio team that just hasn't been clicking and hasn't been able to really get it going. And who knows, maybe they will get Justin Ward off the side of a milk carton and get him to actually participate in an MLL game this week.
I mean, I tend to go the opposite way. I do not know if Justin Ward was a flash in the pan, and so that's going to be kind of interesting.
And can I don't know if you noticed this watching the game last week. I talked to Tom about it. When you've got a guy like Dion standing behind the cage for almost a minute and nobody on Charlotte moves, that proves my point that they have no idea what they're doing on offense.
Oh, I mean, it's been one of those things as a Charlotte fan where you just have to sit back and just assume that help is coming, and that's the only thing I've got.
Next year?
I watch this team this year, next year, 5 years from now. You really don't have I don't really have a plan. I don't think this team really has a plan, but tell you what, we've got some short stick defensive midfielders that can really get it going, and that's all I got. I don't really know what this team's doing. But either way, we will see. That's going to do it for us this week. Gosh, Tim really threw me off. But either way, we'll see you guys next week. Same time, same place, Tuesday nights. Hopefully the band will be back together, depending on scheduling everywhere, but it was great to have you guys on. Props to Tim Thomas, Tom Bobby. You should follow them both everywhere. I can't follow Tom's Twitter handle. I think it's I Love Lacrosse. But either way, follow Laxform.com, and hopefully everyone has a great week, and we will see you guys next week on Laxform Radio, MLO Radio, Lax Dirt Radio, and everything else. But either way, everyone have a great week, and we appreciate you guys for listening. Thanks.